This is Stateside. I'm Lester Graham. A unique collection of Inuit art is being given to the University of Michigan Museum of Art. More than 200 stone sculptures valued at more than $2.5 million and additional funds to endow an Inuit art program are gifts from Phil and Kathy Power. I've joined him at the Center of Michigan headquarters. Before we get to the history of this collection, describe some of these stone sculptures for us.
A lot of them are of animals. Polar bears, fish, seals, walruses. And all of that goes back to the historic origin of why Inuit people started making these carvings in the first place, because the thought was, maybe 1,000 years ago, if you carve a seal, by the process of doing that, you get a better insight and understanding of how seals work and you get better success in your hunting. But as time has gone on, there are a lot of carvings of people. My wife Kathy's favorite carving is of a mother holding a baby. Not an unusual subject, but it's very tender and it's very nice. And you think, here these people are in 40 or 50 degrees below zero, and they're having the same sense of warmth and connectedness that anybody else would have in 80-degree weather. So the Inuit carvings reflect the ordinary divinity of their life in the high Arctic, just as any artistic expression would express the divinity of life in the artist's particular world.
There are also prints and drawings. Are these traditional media for the Inuit?
No. Historically, going back to the Dorset culture, people carved in walrus tusks and ivory and bone, and then also in stone. About 30 years ago, the man who had worked with the Inuit in developing their marketing for their art thought that might be a good idea to have another medium than stone. And he went to Japan and learned how to do Japanese block printing and came back with a lot of knowledge about how to do Japanese print, a whole bunch of Japanese paper, which is important, and taught the Inuit how to make plates, in effect, out of stone and color them and pull prints from them. That led to a whole bunch of wonderful graphic artists developing. And that, in turn, these days, has led to a creative explosion in the Inuit. They're doing all kinds of crazy stuff. One guy who just passed away worked in pastels, and he would do drawings in pastels of subjects like swimming polar bears or whales, but he would do them on black construction paper in sheets 8 feet long and 4 feet wide. It gives you an idea of how fantastically skilled and creative Inuit artists are. And the other point is a very high percentage of Inuits do art in one way or another, both men and women. None of them trained in an art school. All of them unusually observant and characteristic of their environment.
This guy who taught them Japanese block printing.
This was done by a guy called Jim Houston, who really was the guy who, I can't say discovered Inuit art, but he was the guy who pulled it together and had the idea that it could be marketed into the U.S. and the global art market. And he ultimately was hired by the Canadian government to be the governmental representative for the Inuit in Baffin Island.
Your Inuit art collection began because of your father, Eugene, after visiting Baffin Island. Tell us how that came about.
Well, it came about, oddly enough, through Jim Houston, whose father was an old duck hunting friend of my grandfather's. And while Jim Houston was living in Baffin Island with the Inuit, he came to the conclusion that the Inuit needed a way to make a cash income, because they needed to buy cartridges for their rifles and tea and stuff like that. And the only way at that time in the high Canadian Arctic to make a cash income was either to learn how to drive a bulldozer and go into little towns and drive a bulldozer during the day or alternatively, to trap Arctic fox and other animals and try to sell the pelts to the monopoly Hudson's Bay Company, which, of course, screwed the Inuit on the prices. So he came down to see my parents in the mid-50s and described this problem and said, is there a way that we could, and brought with him some small carvings, and our whole family was bowled over by the carvings. And he said, is there a way that we could figure out how Inuit can make some money by doing Inuit-type things rather than white man-type things? And my father looked up and he said, oh, hell yes, this is easy. We'll start a nonprofit corporation and we'll market the art in the American art market. And he and Jim Houston and I set up something that we called Eskimo Art Incorporated. That existed until my father passed away about 8 years ago, at which time my wife Kathy and I took a look, and Eskimo Art Incorporated had achieved its purpose. We shut it down. But by that point, the management and control of Inuit art in Baffin Island was entirely in the hands of the Inuit artists themselves, rather than having a whole bunch of what might be called colonialists trying to run the art for their own purposes. We thought we had to get it into the hands of the people who were doing the creative work. And actually, that's one of the things I'm the proudest of. The art is now in the hands of the artists.
Now, you've been going to Baffin Island, visiting the Inuit there.
I've been to Baffin Island itself twice, once in the mid-50s in order to set up the logistical delivery plan, how to get these carvings out of the Arctic, which was not easy. And then once, about five years ago, I took my wife and some friends up to the high Arctic in January because I wanted to see what it was like. My first job after college was being the sports editor of the paper in Fairbanks, Alaska. So I lived for a fair time in the high Arctic on the western Arctic and spent a lot of time with the Inuit there as well. But I like Arctic people and I like the high Arctic and have nothing but profound admiration for Inuit people.
So we're talking about nearly 50 years later from one visit to the next. How did helping them find a market for their art help that community?
Economically, the community is very much better off because the artists sell their carvings to the local Inuit art co-op, and then the co-op sells them directly to art lovers around the world. So income levels are much higher. And when I was in Baffin Island 5 years ago, there was a store, and people could buy things in the store, very much like a Walmart in the U.S. And lots of people were leading a lifestyle which became, in effect, developed, but in the high Arctic, where in the winter the temperatures are 60 below, and in the summer there may be 45 or 50 degrees, and it's a different part of the world. But the Inuit like to stay where they are, and their culture is very strong. And so the net effect has been to improve income. The Canadian government has really done very well in dealing with the Inuit populations. And there are doctors and visiting nurses who travel around, so health is better. There's schooling, which is much, much better. Lots of people go to larger communities for school. And so the gradual development of the culture with improved economics has been remarkable. The issue, of course, is as the Arctic environment changes with global warming, what is going to happen to the environmental basis of a culture that has been going for 2,500 years?
Based on that, I mean, what do you want people in Michigan to understand about these native people?
First, what I hope Michigan people understand about Inuit people, the Inuit are very competent, very creative, and remarkably good observers of what is taking place around them. Second, the basis for their culture, the sea, the sea ice, the animals, the fish, is under dire threat. The amount of sea ice being formed next to the shore to provide breathing holes for seals and therefore hunting grounds for polar bear is at the lowest level in recorded history. And as climate change is occurring more rapidly in the Arctic than in any other area around the globe, it is likely that the environmental basis for Inuit lifestyles is, if not disappearing, is going to change very radically in the next 30 or 40 years. Let's see.
At this point, Phil Power showed me some of the prints hanging in the Center for Michigan, including one of an owl. Its main body is printed in black, but it graduates into a bright orange. Power said this represents the story of a man.
Ekyaktalaulavik, who had a wife and kids and was a wonderful hunter and a distinguished person in his community, and a big storm came in with a whiteout, and there was no food in the snow house. So he said, well, I got to go out and find something to eat. We can't keep my family going. And everybody said, well, you can't possibly do that. You'll never find your way back home. And he said, I got to do this. So he went out into the whiteout, into the storm. And sure enough, in about 3 minutes, he was lost and had no idea where he was. And then suddenly, in front of him, he looked up, and there was an owl. And the owl landed in front of him and said, you are Ekyaktalaulavik, right? And he said, yes, I am. And you are a famous and distinguished person. He said, nonsense, I'm a totally incompetent thing. And this went on and on and on the way Inuit people do. And finally, at the end of the conversation, the owl said, look, I know you're out, you're looking for food. Follow me, I'll take you to a seal breathing hole, and then I'll take you back to your snow house. And at that, the owl burst into flames, and the light from the burning owl led Ekyaktalaulavik to the seal hole and back to his snow house. And this print is called The Enchanted Owl for that reason. And that's the story that lies behind it.
The bulk of the sculptures are in Power's home.
Here's the collection.
The art display is kept in a room a lot like a comfortable museum itself.
This is caribou horn that's been incised, and those are walrus tusks.
Much of it is stone, some of it bone and ivory. You can find some photos of the pieces on the Michigan Radio website, michiganradio.org.
This collection ranges from pieces made in the 40s probably to the 70s. And that's a significant period of time because it's the period over which Inuit art evolved from its starting point, which is to say, how do we understand the soul of a seal by carving a seal, into a much more, how do we engage in artistic activity for its own purposes? And the span of this collection reflects that fundamental change in this art form.
The collection will be moved to the University of Michigan's Museum of Art about 1 year from now.
What have you asked the University of Michigan Museum of Art to do with this collection of statues and other art?
We have asked them not to engage in relatively standard academic activities, which would, under ordinary circumstances, entail hiring a curator and putting out scholarly monographs and other sorts of things. They'll do that. But that's not the main point. The main point is to find ways in which Inuit art can be brought to the attention of a very wide range of people in Michigan and around the world so that they can understand what Inuit people have to say and what they think about. So traveling shows going to schools. Bring an Inuit artist down from the high Arctic and have that person carve or make prints in the museum. Bring some movies that have been made of Inuit people in their own environment and have Inuit people describe what it's like to build a snow house and to live in the high Arctic in the winter. So the idea is to provide all the benefits of travel to a very extreme place on the earth, but without having to take a plane and take a snow machine and to go out in 60 degree below cold.
We've been speaking with Phil Power about the collection of Inuit art being given to the University of Michigan Museum of Art. Thanks for taking a moment to talk with me.
Lester, I'm delighted to do it. And I want to say this, that the museum, as we've talked about this collection and about the program that we're hoping to endow for Inuit art, they have been very, very responsive and are interested in breaking some new ground with the collection. And they're hoping that other collectors around the country may find this kind of like a magnet, and that other collectors might be interested in donating their own collections to what could become a growing Inuit art program center right here in Michigan.